Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast with NBA shooting coach Dave Love and your host, Matt Robertson, exploring the cutting edge of evidence-based shooting development in basketball today, from shooting form to skill acquisition to shot metrics. This is the Coach Dave Love Podcast.
Welcome to the Coach Dave Love Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Robertson. With me as always, NBA shooting coach Dave Love. Dave, what's going on today?
Hello, Matthew. How are you?
I'm doing great. Coming to you from a beautiful, sunny Moncton, New Brunswick today, 37 degrees Fahrenheit. Delightful.
I am. And that, I mean, Coleman had the reaction that we wanted. But yeah, this time of year, that's kind of a nice day. I'm like the sun has just come up in Calgary, Canada. And yeah, we're probably going to be a daytime high of around 40, 43, which will be like we're having to do the we're Celsius people, but doing the conversion for Coleman. So welcome, Coleman Ayers.
Appreciate it, man. I'm excited to get to it.
Matt, do you want to do the introduction of Coleman? Do you want me to handle that?
Listen, I did a little bit of brief research, by any means basketball. Dave, I want you to take it away the rest of the way. I've got a few questions for him, but get me started.
Yeah, Coleman, I kind of have, I'm going to make it weird. I have a bit of a coaching crush on Coleman, and I'm not afraid to say it. Coleman is a guy that I discovered out of necessity doing a workout with a player in Miami, and we lost our gym. And I don't even remember how I came about to find you, but I had found you that day, and you were just kind of in the middle of what a soft launch for your gym, Details Miami. Do I have the name correct?
Yeah.
And then I kind of over the next 2 months discovered, oh, wait a second, this guy's a big deal. And not only is he a big deal, he's about 26 years younger than I thought he was. And he's really smart and really well educated. And so I went, you know, those guys in high school that you're like, they had everything and you wanted to hate them, but then they were so nice that you couldn't hate the guy. I'm like, Coleman's that guy for me now in coaching. So by any means basketball, massive following on YouTube, big following on Instagram, and like with smart content. So that's why he's here today. So welcome, Coleman.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate that, man. And we've had great conversations. I've learned a lot from you directly and indirectly through content, ideas, stuff like that. So it's a pleasure, man.
I'm excited to see what you might have learned from me. Because yeah, the feeling's mutual. Like I pulled a lot of you had a great moment, you and I, and maybe we'll go into that. Let's make sure we go into this in about 20 minutes where I had a drill that I was doing and I feel like you may have been inspired by that drill, but then, or maybe you just did something similar and added a wrinkle to it that I hadn't thought of. And I was like, oh, I've been doing this for 5 years. How have I not thought to do that little thing? And I'll share what that is later on. But I want to get into it. I want to start, Coleman. Tell me about like your playing background and then how that kind of led you into coaching.
Yes, absolutely. So I think like most coaches, the playing side of things was just not, I don't want to say not meant for me because I still play a lot and I feel like I've gotten pretty good at basketball. But when I was younger, it was tough. And it was like, I mean, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, which is, in my opinion, the best area for youth and high school basketball in the world, really. So, I mean, I was the only player on my high school team that didn't go Division I pretty much, or a couple D3 players, but only player on my team that didn't play college. And I'm like this 5'8". 120-pound white kid with a bowl cut, like going into my junior year. And because of that, and mind you, again, I'm playing with like 6'3" point guards who are going to high major Division I's next year. I'm like, all right, I got to figure this out. So long story short, I'm, you know, the kid that's always doing the drills, the kid that's always in the gym before everyone. And I got decently skilled. You know, I could do all the moves. I could do anything on a cone. I could do anything in an empty gym. I could shoot the crap out of the ball. Shot 50% from three my senior season, but just didn't play as much as I would have wanted to because defense, primarily defense, but also like couldn't handle pressure, couldn't handle physical. So it's like there's all these things I was missing. And through the process of like trying to get myself to that next level, which is always my dream, playing college basketball, I started to develop a really intense passion, but also curiosity for just like how to get better as a basketball player. Like what makes these players, because it's not just the physical side and the athleticism, like what makes these players better? What makes them in-game players? What helps them develop such a feel for the game and be, you know, shooters that are just as good as me when they don't put in nearly the amount of reps? Like what's behind all this? So end up, you know, working my butt off, getting the opportunity to play Division III at some pretty solid schools. Nothing crazy, but I had the offers on the table. I was, you know, pretty much set to play Division III, which again, that was my dream. Like I didn't care where I went. I just wanted to keep this ball rolling. But then I realized that there were probably, if I were to take that route, I would probably get out 4 years later and practically be where I was at in terms of my coaching career. So it was this really weird fork in the road where I'm like, do I go to a regular school or am I a regular student pursue this whole coaching thing and training thing, or do I go play and do what, you know, I love and not feel that sunk cost fallacy that, you know, a lot of us feel. So ended up somehow getting a full scholarship academically to University of Miami, where I was able to also be with the team for like the first year. And that was kind of like manager walk-on type weird role. Ended up not really liking that much, primarily because I just wanted to be like, I've never been somebody who likes people telling me what to do, but especially when I'm like in this process of figuring out coaching and training, I'm like, you know, I have to rebound for these players and I'm seeing things where I'm like, yo, I know like I can improve these workouts because I'm doing all the research, I'm reading all the books. And if I do, they're going to get mad. And it's not, you know, knock on anyone there. It's just like, I like to do my own thing. So ended up stopping that and just kind of went like independent. Didn't really know anybody in Miami. So just hit up random high schoolers. Hey, let's get in the gym. Let's get in the gym. Grinding my way out for those 4 or 5 years while I was in school and like a year afterwards. And then through that, it was just, you know, an incremental process of first learning because I developed a little bit of a following. And my biggest fear I always tell people is, when my following exceeds my knowledge, I never want that to be the case. I always want my knowledge to exceed my following. And so it was a process of like waking up every day, learning not just something new, but 5, 6, 7 things, then going applying them and then putting out content later on. And hopefully, you know, people got a pretty good idea of like, you know, some of the unique philosophies that I was able to develop through just doing all this research and getting a ton of experience. And then, yeah, just kind of growing from there, the gym, the international things, you know, different clients coming in. It's just been a slow but kind of steady process over the years.
I have a couple of questions for you, and one is a bit of a sidetrack from an early comment you made. One of my favorite kind of niche questions to ask is like, what's your NBA comp if you're playing, you know, in college or in high school? Like, what's your so just for give you a second to think about it, I'm like a super washed, like homeless man, Steve Novak, like no defense, parking in the corner, knockdown. Dave is Jeff Hornacek, also homeless man's version. Like, what's your NBA comp?
Ah, man. Okay. So I would say I used to be a super skinny JJ Redick, like really good at like coming off screens, coming up, you know, uphill, turning into shots, finding shots off ball. And I always had a decent feel for like attacking a closeout and getting into one dribble or making a little dime off like a handoff or whatever. As I've developed, and I've been talking to a lot of people about this recently. I probably haven't done a drill with myself other than just me like experimenting. Like I go in the gym and experiment a lot with different stuff, but I'm not like working on my game. My game has come so far. Like further than I would ever have dreamt of it coming when I was in high school and stuff, to the point where, like, I mean, I've talked to professional teams about playing for a season now, and it's like, at this point, I'm like, I can't do it. But all point is, I've developed into a more well-rounded player than just like the poor man's, you know, Walgreens version of JJ Redick.
Mid-20s, like, is that correct?
I mean, the whole thing with these, like, you always got to compare the white guys to the white guys. So it's like, I got to find some comparison there. But I got to think about it, man. I'll have an answer by the end. Maybe a EuroLeague player, just because I'm not the most athletic. So traditionally, you know, athleticism was a little bit lower. But I don't know. I'll have an answer by the end. Because
no sweat.
Coleman, are you in your mid-20s, Coleman?
Is that
in your mid-20s?
Yeah, I just turned 25 like a month or two ago.
I found, now I wasn't near the level of player even that you were. Never mind these guys that we work out with, but I found the same thing, that once I got out of organized basketball and was just playing, I took a massive jump as a player, and I've heard a number of people say that. Do you think that's an age-related thing, that we just kind of have to get to 22 years old before, like, our brain catches up and our body catches up? And or do you think that's, a organized basketball kind of slows the system that should be happening? And we should be, like, you had a recent post about the little games in Brazil and in soccer. Which do you think is the biggest impact, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so I think in not every coach, but so many coaches that I talk to go through the same thing, where they're like, yo, after I stopped officially playing, I took a massive leap, and now I feel like I want to jump back in playing and, like, see what I can do. And I think I would say for three main reasons. Number one is a mental thing, where, like, we're not putting pressure on ourselves anymore to be this. It's like you don't associate yourself with playing. You don't identify as a player because of that. If I shoot 2 for 20 in a pickup session or like an open run, it sucks, but I move on with my day. And because of that, I'm shooting more freely. I'm experimenting more. I'm trying more things. First, when I was a player and I shot 2 for 20 in a practice, I would feel like I'm a terrible human being. So, like, the freedom of the mind, I think, is definitely a big thing. Number two, I do think a lot of it is, like, as a player, you feel the pressure to just do drills and drills and drills and drills and drills. And your playing is just a supplement to that, versus when you are, once you get older and, like, to the point where I'm at, I play every day at this point, just to stay in shape. Like, 5-on-5, 3v3, I play 1-on-1. And then, like, sometimes I'll be like, you know, just to put myself through that learning process again, like, yo, I want to go work on this shot that I missed a bunch yesterday when I was playing 1v1 versus my guy Cam or something. Like, it flips, in my opinion, to more so how skill development should be, where you're playing against, live defense, you're experimenting with things, just like you mentioned with the entire thing through games in Brazil. And then I think number three, it is probably like the age thing. Like, you get to a certain point where I'm seeing the game a lot better. And I do think it's just because, like, at a certain point, your brain matures and you notice patterns better. Like, you've seen more basketball to the point where, like, some of the reads that I make on the court now, I could have never made when I was younger, just because, like, I didn't have that inherent natural feel. And it takes time and experience and, like, me watching a lot of film and seeing these things over and over and over again. And then I think just the maturity of the brain to do that. And then I would say lastly, like, I was, again, like 5'8", 130 pounds soaking wet when I was younger. So it's like, I got a little bit athletic. I got to the point where I was lifting, I could dunk a little bit. And it's like, of course that's going to help. So yeah, I would say between those, it's crazy how many jumps I'll see with players to coaches.
I want to get into what I think is your superpower. I think you're one of the best research coaches out there, especially in social media, but, like, beyond. I think you've done a great job of understanding skill acquisition principles, but your superpower is articulating them in a way that people understand, or at least dummies like me understand. And I find there's a lot of people that they may have equal or greater knowledge, but I don't understand what they're saying. And you, I go, oh, like you do a great job of putting it in layman's terms. And so I want to dive into what some of those skill acquisition ideas. Where did you start, or where would you recommend somebody that is just getting exposed to the ideas? Where would you start learning if you were to start now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I started kind of in a more difficult way, because I don't think like Rob Gray hadn't been like as prominent as he is now. And Rob's amazing. There are other resources now that have come to the forefront who I think do a really good job as well as there with putting it in layman's terms. And to my knowledge, at least, there wasn't much out there. So I was literally like going through the science. A lot of it was also just like stripping away, because I never really had a trainer when I was younger. So I didn't really know what that meant. Like, I didn't know what, I just got drills from, you know, social media and stuff, but I didn't really know what it meant. So I had to recreate this entire notion and idea of what a trainer actually was from scratch when I started. So to me, I just started thinking about things logically. If I want to get better at basketball, I should probably play more games, play more basketball, right? If I want to make a shot more difficult, well, maybe I shoot a different shot every time. And like a lot of these things, I don't want to say they're common sense, but they align with what we think logically. And what I started to realize was, as I'm reading this research, it's kind of confirming what I'm thinking, but in other ways, like it would feed into it. And then I would have these big realizations of like, oh, okay, now I can actually apply this in different ways. I can make this, make sure that this actually aligns with the research as well. So I think a lot of it was, again, just starting from scratch, finding research. Like, I didn't know the term variability at first, but I would search up like all these different keywords until I found something. And then a lot of it was like looking into other sports. Like, I did a lot of research because skill acquisition in soccer and even like in volleyball and other sports, and, you know, even golf is a very isolated sport, but even golf and tennis, like there's a lot of research there and a lot of application there compared to basketball. So I'll just be like, okay, if this works in soccer, it probably works in basketball too. They're both, you know, somewhat similar invasion sports, whatever. So I started that way. And then to answer your question, I think I would say, yes, start with like How We Learn to Move, Rob Gray. Like, I just released a book, so without, you know, plugging it too much, I think that's hopefully a good resource,
you
know, to
plug
people.
The hell out of it.
You give the plug.
Go get the book, I guess. You know, it'll help you guys
What's
out.
What's it called? What's it called?
Deep Skill. Deep Skill is the book. It's on Amazon. But I also think there's a lot of value in, like, I'm working on a coach's certification course right now, and I'm trying to find a balance between the science and then the art. Like, I don't want people to get too sciencey to the point where they forget how much of an art basketball training is. And I don't want people to forget how much science can help us. So it's like this balance to find. And I think when people subscribe to only one book or one philosophy or one idea, one, you know, general concept, I think that's where it can get dangerous. And I would say, even if, you know, you learn certain concepts in a book, still go try to find research on it. Still go try to like come up with new things, because that's really where not only you're going to develop like a true understanding of it, like a holistic understanding of it, but you're going to come up with unique ideas that can kind of separate your philosophy and like grow the game a little bit.
I always recommend, like, if skill acquisition concepts are foreign to you and you feel like, okay, I got to dive in, that can be overwhelming. And I would recommend people kind of start with, what is a constraint? What is the challenge point? And then what is block, variable, and random? What does that mean? Those are kind of my things that I want to make sure people understand. What advice would you give?
Yeah, I think I would definitely add in all those, or I would include all those as like the fundamental three. I think some of the other pillars are implicit learning versus explicit learning, which kind of goes in with constraints-led approach. Like, the fact, I think the idea that we can learn without hearing something or knowing exactly what we are training is a foreign idea to some. And it makes sense. Like traditionally, when we go through school, we know what we're learning because we're freaking memorizing it. We have a unit that says, hey, we're going to be learning about, I don't know, mammals in this. And it's like, we go through those and we memorize them. Whereas like in basketball, players will learn things all the time that they don't know how they learned it. You ask the best players that you work with, Dave, like, yo, how'd you like, did you learn that move that you just did? And like, no. I mean, some of them will say it, some of them will lie, some of them will be right, and they actually did take it from them. But a lot of it is implicit. And I think understanding that implicit learning is not only a thing, but also like the more robust way to learn things is a really big philosophy. And then, like you said, I think a lot of it just comes down to like the optimal zone of improvement is what I think Daniel Coyle actually coined the term. But like a lot of training is too easy, and then some training is too hard. If we fit players into the optimal zone of improvement where they're a little bit frustrated, but it's not like so much that they just give up, they're going to get better, especially when we ensure that that skill that is being challenged in that zone is a skill that is applicable to them. They're going to get better. But a lot of it is like, how do we make training more challenging without just creating the facade of, oh, it's fatiguing, therefore it's challenging. Like, how do we actually challenge the skill behind it? So I think that's like one of the most fundamental ideas that I've talked to people about is like, look, you have to make sure your training is challenging. That's number one. Everything past that, you know, you can add on piece by piece, but that is like truly the foundation to training. And it's kind of crazy how much I see that doesn't check that box. But yeah, I would say you kind of listed off the majority of them.
So I hadn't heard that term implicit learning until this. So I kind of get to exercise the voice of the people in this pod, and I kind of understand it from the context, voice of the people. I kind of get it from the context that you gave. Can you give some examples or sort of your theory around like pushing implicit learning, even though it's sort of supposed to be not exactly what you're teaching? Can you, I didn't say that in a very concise way, but can you kind of talk about this a little bit more?
Yeah, for sure. Great question. For sure. So the idea of implicit learning is rather than me explaining to a player and them therefore registering what they're going to be working on and how we're going to do it, it is learned through a little bit more of how we design a drill. So in other words, we can use what's called a constraint, just a task to kind of help them learn something. Easy example is something like no jump shooting. If a player has a terrible hitch in their shot, they don't really have good energy transfer on their shot, you can just say, hey, you're going to shoot a three-pointer or whatever is kind of at the end of your range. You are not allowed to jump here. They don't know that they're working on the timing, like creating fluidity. They don't know that. They may guess, but it's not like I'm telling them, hey, make sure your legs align, like, you know, all these different things. I'm just saying, do this task, feel it out. Then you can kind of help coach them up through it. Like, hey, try to time this up a little bit more, like get some more power, hit the back of the rim, use a cue to get them doing something that is result-based. Through that, they generate a feel or they've been exposed to like a new level of energy transfer. And it takes time. Implicit learning takes time. It takes longer than explicit learning, but it also sticks around for longer. Like it is, athletes retain implicit learning better, meaning that 2 weeks down the line, they will probably be better at that skill versus if we just coach it up bit by bit by bit. And then most times it just kind of fizzles out after that session. So, I mean, that can go for shooting. And I'm sure Dave has plenty of great examples here that I'll let you talk about after this. That can go for just learning the game. Like a lot of players, yes, we can help them understand certain patterns in the game and things that just occur over and over again. But if we put them in a situation and say, hey, you're going to play 3v3 with no dribbles, well, chances are they're going to figure out some ways to get open without dribbling the ball. Then you can kind of teach them like, hey, on that one, maybe try to like create some contact before the cut. You can coach them through these things. But rather than just saying, okay, we're going to rep out this cut, this is, you know, this concept that you have to know, we have to work on, it is allowing them space to find solutions that work for them. And again, that can go for shooting, tactical play, what angles they take when they attack the rim, literally anything that we kind of set up a task through constraints for them to learn through, and then allow them to just find these solutions and go through this kind of guided discovery process that ends up helping them.
The two examples that I use, or that I think are easiest to understand in the way that I coach and what I coach, is I could tell you, hey, I want you to be better balanced. And in order to be better balanced, I want your feet to be hip width apart, and I want your body posture to be athletic. And now I'm explicitly teaching you what to do. Or I can just push you and help you and get you in position where you are off balance and teach you to figure it out. And that would be the implicit learning that I didn't have to tell you, no, in order to be balanced, you must do these things. I just put you in a position where you have to kind of figure it out. Or with hand placement, where do I want your shooting hand to be underneath the middle of the basketball? What part of the hand? You know, that's all the explicit stuff. Or I can say, take your guide hand off. And you're going to self-organize in such a way where you're going to probably find the middle of the ball. And it might take, as Coleman said, it might take a few reps or a little while, because you may not make the adjustment that's necessary. And now you're getting, but you're seeing the feedback, and the feedback is teaching you how to adjust what you need to adjust in order to get the results that you want, rather than me telling you it must be this way.
Right. Boys. Funny you mentioned that first drill. So I did one the other day where I put like a chair, like two, I stacked two chairs on top of each other. This is for like the balance one. And I was like, don't, all right, I'm going to push you into this chair. Don't run into the chair. Stop yourself and shoot. And I'm out here just, I might get arrested for this, but like, I'm literally just like chucking them into the chair, because they just like, I wanted to expose them to the feeling of like, hey, if you don't stop yourself, you're going to run into this chair. It's probably going to hurt a little bit. And they figure it out. Again, like I said, I never mention anything about, you know, get your left foot outside of your center of mass to stop yourself. They're going to figure it out because they don't want to hit that chair. And through that, the learning process is just a little bit more robust and fun.
So let's do the thing that we talked about. I had a drill that I did that first workout with an unnamed NBA player at your facility, where I had him leaning his full body weight into me. I'm holding up this gigantic man, and they're basically pulling the chair out, and he's got to get his balance into a form shooting drill. And then several weeks later, I saw your social media, and I was so mad at myself. I was a little mad at you, but I was more mad at myself because I'm like, oh, he put a wrinkle on it that I've been doing. Literally, I've been doing this drill since 2008, and I didn't think to make the adjustment of have the player lean back, stand behind them, lean back into you, and pull the chair out. And now I'm like, so thank you for opening up that side of my brain.
Hey, well, thank you for giving me ideas and, you know, continuing to feed ideas. Because even like the form shooting side of thing, like I never really thought about, like, I, of course, I thought about like, okay, form shooting that we traditionally do is not really form shooting, because you're shooting right under the basket and it's not an actual shooting form. It's just, yeah, let me place the ball on the rim real quick. But I never really thought about like opening up dialogue about like, let's rethink what form shooting is. Like, I would work on players' form from a reasonable distance. But I remember, I think it was that workout, honestly, where I think I asked you about something. He was like, yeah, you know, this is form shooting. And I'm like, it's such a like simple idea that I think, you know, is very, it's one of those ideas where, like you said, you're like, how did I not even think about this? So now, like, since then, I literally will address form shooting as something different. I'll be like, all right, if you want to see the ball go in a bunch of times, it's psychological momentum shooting or psychological shooting, because you're just seeing that you're gaining some psychological momentum. When we do form shooting, it is going to be the vast majority of times from somewhere that is a realistic distance, so we can actually get all the forces and feel from, you know, an actual shot. So appreciate you for that idea and plenty more.
This is one of Dave's ideas that it strikes me personally, because we've talked about, Dave says traditional form shooting is just shooting slowly close to the basket is what it's essentially what it is. And as a former player, that was all we ever did.
Yeah.
But it's not the best way. I really appreciate you guys. Let's take a super quick break. I want to keep going with this skill acquisition stuff, but let's take a super quick break, fellas.
Hey there, basketball fans. I'm NBA shooting coach Dave Love, and I've got exciting news just for you. Introducing my exclusive free basketball shooting newsletter. It's packed with insights and techniques straight from the hardwood. Have you ever wondered how NBA players improve their shots? Or how you could get to the next level, whether you're a college player, a coach, or a budding youth player? My newsletter brings all this and more directly to your inbox. Each edition is a deep dive into the world of basketball shooting. I'll share some of the tips and ideas that I use with my NBA clients, tailored for every level of the game. But wait, there's more. Subscribers receive exclusive monthly discounts on my online products. From training videos to personalized coaching sessions, you'll get it all for a fraction of the price. And the best part of all, it's absolutely free to join. So what are you waiting for? Elevate your game and join a community of passionate players and coaches from around the globe. Signing up is easy. Just visit CoachDaveLove.com.
All right, welcome back. So I'm not on social media, but I do a ton of consumption of basketball stuff online. And so, to be honest, I don't see any really shooting coaches other than Dave, working with skill acquisition ideas. And I don't see very many trainers working with skill acquisition ideas. Let's start with you, Dave. And then Coleman, I want to hear from you also. But talk about how this is just such an underappreciated and underutilized, skill set is not the right term, but set of ideas in the game right now.
Well, the analogy I give is that if you're playing blackjack and you don't know to split aces, you can still win hands. And so if you can learn to, in these situations, split aces, and I think it's split eights as well, or sixes. If you can learn those, you win more hands in blackjack. The odds are more in your favor. And I think these skill acquisition ideas are those principles for training. Yeah, I could say nothing. And there's a chance that over the course of a year, a player is going to get better. I could do nothing. I could do everything wrong according to skill acquisition research. And probably the player might improve some, but the odds are they're going to improve more. And I loved what Coleman said earlier in the episode about the way I phrase it is that some of these ideas are really intuitive and that you learn them and you go, yeah, now, that really supports what I've been doing so far. And then there's a couple things that are counterintuitive that I had to take a step back and say, I thought my logic and the way I was doing it was this. I might need to look at that and make a pivot. And I think block variable random practice were the initial one that I'm like, I was doing things over and over and over again with the expectation that made players better by doing the same thing. We want the same results, so do the same thing. And not understanding the adaptability that comes through variability that is necessary. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I agree. And I think, like you said, it's literally parallel to the blackjack example. I think my biggest pet peeve saying that I hear far too often is, but it works. It's like, why, why do we need to look at anything else? Like, it works. Like, my training works. My players get good. And it's like, okay, first off, you may get your players, or, traditionally as an industry, let's say, we may get players from 50 to 70, 50% of their max potential to 70. That works for sure. 100%. That's a good job. Why can't we shoot to get them to 90? Why not just see if it works more? And I think a lot of it is ego. I think a lot of it is laziness. But I think a lot of it is also just not knowing where to look. And I do see more trainers and coaches now who are opening up to doing more research because it's more digestible, more accessible, And that's one of my big goals, like you said, is to kind of put it in layman's terms. But I do, I mean, there's multiple studies on this, I believe. But the one that always stuck with me was like doctors who have been a doctor for 20 years are statistically worse at their job than doctors who have been 5-year doctors. Because at some point you stop learning. You're like, all right, I've been a doctor for 10 years. I've done medical school for freaking 8, 10, 12 years. I know it all, right? And it's very justifiable. But then new research comes out, the field evolves, people change, lifestyles change. And therefore, the doctors who have been working their butt off for the last 5 years to learn modern research are better at what they do. And I never want to be that 20-year doctor. I never want to be the person who's like, oh, dang, like in the back of my mind, I know that somebody who is less experienced is better at what they do because I got lazy about it. And again, like there's so many confounding variables to what we do. We're like, I've worked with a few, or I've been around a few situations where I've seen trainers, like whether they come in our gym or whether I've just seen them around, they don't do a bad job, but they're just doing maintenance work with players. Like, you know, do some two ball stuff, spot shooting, clap it up, get them tired, get out of there. And a player gets better. And I'm like, how? And then I realize that they're going to open runs with other NBA players 3 days a week during the offseason. What do you think got them better? The two ball drills or going and hooping against the best players in the world 3 days a week? But again, it's always like the trainer who takes the credit for it, which is okay. Like I would probably do the same thing if I were in their spot. But there's so many different confounding variables. Even for kids, coaches can say like, oh, this player's gotten a lot better. Well, they're also going to the park, or they're also going to work out with their buddies and playing 1v1 after every practice. There's just so many different confounding variables that come into play. And that clouds how we see the results that we're actually getting. Because I truly don't, I think from every level, from NBA, I think every, not every NBA player, but a lot of players that I've been around, NBA, pro, whatever, high-level basketball players. I think with diligent work that is crafted the right way, there's a lot more room for improvement than we see. And again, like I'm not knocking anybody, but I do think there are a lot of players who reach the NBA and they don't have anyone who's going to actually push them and give them challenging training. And a lot of them, it's not on the trainer, it's on the player because they're not willing to invest in themselves. Despite making millions and millions of dollars, they don't want to spend a dime on training, which is an investment in themselves. Because of that, they get people who are just putting them through maintenance work for 10 years and they don't improve. And that's, I'm just saying that because it happens at every level, from NBA to international pros, college to high school to middle schoolers. Like there is so much more room for improvement. And that's part of what made me dive into all this stuff. Cause like, I can't, like, we're going to have to do something different if we really want to start building players up again. Maybe they're already getting 50 to 70. Now we want to get them 50 to 80 or 50 to 90% of their potential.
Dave, Coleman, before you jump in, sir, Dave, really quick, before you jump in, I just, one of the sayings in business, they say the most dangerous and expensive words in business is, this is how we've always done it.
Hmm.
And it's so dangerous because we get falled into that trap. And sorry, Dave, I know you want to jump in, but that's just something that really stuck with me about what you said. That's just how we do it. It works, you know?
Yes.
Coleman, I want to give you an opportunity to sort of raise people to your level with a question that I think is, or a topic that I think is really common. Punch holes in the idea. And if you can reference some of the skill acquisition principles that you think are important here, punch holes in the idea that a 13-year-old kid that wants to become a great shooter should be training the same way that Steph Curry, an already great shooter, trains. And then the idea that an NBA pro who's a poor shooter should train differently than the kid who's a poor shooter.
Interesting. I like that. So I think first off is realizing that just because a player is at a certain spot in terms of status, skill, success, doesn't mean that the work they are currently doing got them there. So like if you see a player who's one of the best in the world doing something, that something is often not responsible for the position that they're in. It just, It's just something that they're doing. Now, if you really look into the history of things that they've done, we can get a little bit more clues here. Like, you know, if you look into it, there are all these things. Like, something came out recently where Kyrie Irving grew up with a backboard that had like a hole where the square is. And that's an environmental constraint that he grew up with that is forcing him to find these different, you know, spins off the backboard and all this. And that's there's probably some value in that, because it's like, that's how we grew up. That's when like a lot of his development and creativity was generated. Even then, still, there's so many confounding variables. Like, you got Steph Curry and others being like, yeah, you know, you got to do 500 form shooting, you know, reps a day. And it's like, a lot of the best players in the world don't know, goes back to implicit learning, what they're doing, why they're, this sounds bad, but I'll explain it, what they're doing, why they're doing, and how they got to the point that they are. There are literally videos of Steph Curry talking about, like, you want to make sure that there's space in between, like, the ball and your palm or whatever it is, and then you just look at Steph's form and there's no space. Like, it's just the opposite of what he says. And that, to me, speaks to how, to why he's so good, because he doesn't think about any of these things. He, like, he's so good to the point where he doesn't even know what he's doing. And, like, a lot of the best players in the world, again, going back to implicit learning, you're like, yo, why'd you make that move? Like, what'd you see there? They may try to say something like, yeah, you know, I saw his momentum. They're just hooping. So to build that back into your point, like, a lot of it starts in early childhood. A lot of it is just natural ability. And a lot of it is playing growing up. So just because the work that, you know, when they're younger has gotten them to a point when they're 28 years old where they're really good, doesn't mean the work that they're doing at 28 is what got them there. I also think, again, like, from a just logical standpoint, a 13-year-old and Steph Curry have vastly different individual constraints. Their limb length, their, you know, maybe like even down to like their dominant eye, you know, how strong they are to be able to stop themselves on shots, how consolidated their form is. Like, you know, can they even, there's an idea that's an interesting thing to bring up. Since you mentioned like bringing some of the skill acquisition principles in, where experts are really good at, if they have a wide open shot in a controlled environment, they're going to shoot it the same way every time, pretty much, right? They're able to display this consistency. However, when it's varying conditions, when they're in a game, when it's they're contested, when there's fatigue, all these different things, they're able to display something called functional movement variability, which means that they're able to vary their technique and maybe get a little bit lower when they're tired, right? Create some more power, maybe fade a little bit and kick their right leg up just a little bit as they shoot and still achieve the same thing. Whereas novices, a lot of the time, they don't even have a consistency on their unchanging condition shot. So if you're 13, you don't have that. Well, there's probably more value in doing some block practice, right? So there's all these different variables that come into play. And then again, like I mentioned, just because Steph or X player is doing something at this level doesn't mean that that's what got them there. And as a result, I think it's cool to look at what some of the NBA guys do, but it should not be scaled down to younger levels for the most part, in my opinion.
I guess if you can't see the building blocks that they're kind of sitting on,
right?
You can't start building those skills without those building blocks, even though, you know, we can't, like you say, the Kyrie Irving backboard is kind of a fun one. Yeah. Fellas, let's take a super quick break, and then I have another kind of topic that I want to jump into here.
Hey, basketball fans, Coach Dave Love here with an exclusive offer just for you, my personalized video shot analysis. Imagine having an NBA shooting coach analyze your shooting form, just like I do for the pros. That's exactly what you'll get with my video shot analysis. Here's how it works. You send me a video of your shot, and I'll break it down frame by frame. I'll pinpoint your strengths and identify the areas of improvement and give you tailored advice to take your shot to the next level. You'll receive a comprehensive analysis designed just for you. Whether you're a beginner or an aspiring pro, my feedback will help you shoot with confidence and precision. It isn't just feedback, it's a game changer. With my video shot analysis, you're not just practicing, you're evolving, and every single shot counts. Ready to transform your game? Visit coachdavelove.com/store to learn more and get started. That's coachdavelove.com/store and look for video shot analysis.
All right, welcome back. So if you've been kind of following the show for the last 10 episodes, we did an episode that was called Dave's Shooting Non-Negotiables. And Dave, really quick, do you want to give us a rundown of what those are just for frame of reference?
Yeah, we can go back and listen to the episode, but I want players to be as balanced as possible. I want them to push both sides of the ball evenly, and I want them to be able to get the ball in the air, dropping down on the hoop. And how you do those things can vary from player to player, but if we want to be consistent, we need to be doing those things as best as we possibly can.
So those are worded pretty specifically to allow wiggle room in how they're getting to that result. Coleman, do you have anything in your practice that is kind of similar, that are your kind of non-negotiables?
Yeah, so I say, and I'll tie Dave's in to these, kind of second his. In terms of the three that I'll usually say are very result-based and like almost too logical or obvious, the ball's got to go straight. The ball's got to have good trajectory to go in the hoop. And traditionally, you have to have pretty good, what I call flow, to make this happen. Now, the flow is, you got your Sean Marions and other players, or even players with like really bad hitches where you're like, right, I don't know. But usually what the flow will do is you'll have enough power on the shot, right? So you could really say like power, the ball has to get to the rim, it has to go high enough to get into the rim, and it has to be straight. Theoretically, and I agree with Dave, and I'll talk about this, but theoretically, you could shoot a backwards granny shot, and if those three things happen, and you're able to get that shot off at every level and shoot it with fatigue, shoot it with anxiety, I'm not going to change it. We're going to maybe experiment with different things, but I'm not going to change it. So I look at result-based first, right? Does the ball go straight? Does the ball get high enough? Does the ball get there? Usually as a result or a byproduct of having the energy transfer to get the ball there. But even then, the ball is pretty light. Most players can get the ball to the rim. I do think what I'm looking for from a technical standpoint is, again, is it a habit of yours to get on balance when you can? Of course, can you shoot off balance when you need to? But like, is it the first option to get on balance? And then how do you do that? So I would absolutely put that as probably my first one too. Number two, is the shot scalable to higher levels, fatigue, and anxiety? So I've had players where I'm like, yo, you can shoot this shot really well in high school. At the college level, the closeouts are going to be faster. The athletes are going to be taller. We're going to have to change something, whether this is maybe elevating a little bit more, whether this is just like getting a quicker trigger. But again, even then, it's like, it's a tweak. It's not a change. And for fatigue, like some players are great. I would say fatigue and range. Some players are really good at shooting like mid-range shots or super close threes, but once they get tired, they rely so much on like power and like getting up into this two motion shot that they can't really get it there. And same thing if they take a step past the 3-point line. And then anxiety, like some players shoot such a slow shot that in my opinion, it gives them time to think about it too much, where it's like a really slow shot. So when it comes down to it, it's at the end of the game, it's a clutch shot. There's no like, all right, I'm just catching and shoot it. Like Steph Curry, just boom, catch and shoot. Whereas other players, I think where they have more like, especially taller players who can just like kind of get the ball there based on just willing it there, they have a more extensive window of thought where they can kind of like reinvest their thoughts and overthink things. So again, none of these are really like, I'll put it this way. I like to see these things, but if it really comes down to it, it's result-based. It's, does the ball get there? Is it high enough and is it straight?
So we're sort of getting towards the end, and I this conversation could go on forever. And as the voice of the people, I want to say, Coleman, the people, give the people what they want. I hope you'll come back in 3 or 4 months because this has been an awesome conversation. Sorry, no, this is Dave, this is your podcast and we haven't talked about this, but I'm just going to go out on a limb and throw that out there. The last kind of topic I want to dive into, Coleman, I want to start with you, and then Dave, I want to go to you. you've mentioned the mental side of training a couple of times when you're talking about your development and you're talking about the anxiety of these players of shooting. Do you have methodology or specific exercises you're doing with your guys to help work on that mental side? And I've seen a couple of your things on, I was just peeking at your Instagram before this, and you have a couple of notes. Can you talk about the mental side of the game and your training just for a bit? And then Dave, I want to hear from you.
Yeah. I mean, going back to, I guess, my background, like I grew up somebody who overthought everything, who, you know, I cared so much that there was like anxiety on normal shots. And so I understand like how much potential is left on the table for a lot of players. And a lot of it is because of how I train. So I've tried to make adjustments. Number one, just laying the foundation of like the mental side is far more important than people mention and that most trainers and coaches will traditionally include. It sounds cliche when you're like younger and you're like, oh, basketball is 80% mental. It's like, get out of here, bro. Like, no, it's not. And now I'm realizing like it really is 80%, whatever. That's just a number, but like it's very mental. So whether that's including like simple pressure and shooting drills, like let's see how many you can make without missing two in a row. You're going against, you know, maybe your record or somebody else on the other side, a teammate. These competitions where we're just like micro dosing pressure and anxiety into sessions. To me, that's huge because it exposes you to how it feels to shoot with a little bit of pressure. If you're up at 15 and you miss one and you can't miss that second one, now you're getting repetition with these pressure inducing shots. So it's that, it's also helping players like enter the flow state, because the more you enter that flow state or that zone, the better you're going to shoot statistically. If you get a player who can literally get into the zone on a game to game basis, they're going to shoot much better than if the same player doesn't understand or hasn't deliberately trained entering that flow state. So for me, that's, you know, meditation, that's helping them find cues to let negatives go. I'm not a sports psychologist by any stretch of the imagination, but I've done a crazy amount of research and experimentation with things that have kind of helped me get players to understand these concepts and more importantly, be able to access, you know, different, I guess, mind states and work through adversity better. So I think that's a lot of, again, being a shooter, I'm sure Dave would agree, like the technical side is great, but it's like, if you don't have the mental side as something that is at least somewhat included in your regimen and kind of sewed into what you're doing, you're definitely leaving something on the table.
I love the little analogy you threw in there of micro dosing pressure. That is, yes. That's crazy. That gives me an entire image, an entire like training setup just by that verbiage. So thank you for that. Dave, what's Absolutely. Your version of this?
Oh man. The things I'll focus on, I'll try and be really quick here. I'll focus on really acknowledging where we are, because historically I'm working with weak shooters and I need them to be aware that's their reality, and that we have a chance to grow from there if we can do work. I want to be aware of knowledge of process versus knowledge of results. The results aren't going to be there in the beginning, and we need to lean more on the knowledge, like the awareness of our process is leading us in the right direction, as opposed to leaning on results to affirm that we're headed where we need to be going. And then I want players to understand that confidence is a byproduct, not a product. Mm-hmm. And confidence comes from having done work and seeing results, and not I give you confidence and that helps your results. If I give you confidence as though it's a product, that goes away as soon as you see the results don't match up. And so, yes, I'd like you to be more confident, but I'm going to do the work to help you see the results that make you confident. As opposed to trying to do it in the reverse order. So those are some of the things that I know we're coming to the end here. And so I want to say this. When Coleman says, I've done a crazy amount of research, I have a ton of respect for what I believe that actually means. And I hear some people say like, oh, I've researched such and such. And I'm like, no, you've observed. observing is not research. And I believe what Coleman says when he says research is actually research. And I have a ton of respect for that.
Appreciate that, man. Hopefully it is. Hopefully it's enough to justify some of the things that I say. Oh, because I know we're coming to the end. I have my player comparison. Sergio Yui on Real Madrid. Super niche player. Go search him up if you haven't heard of him. Crazy shot maker. Pretty good feel for the game. Shoots terrible shots sometimes. Doesn't play much defense. But amazing player to watch.
I absolutely love that. Real quick, I asked Dave this last week. Coleman, what is the book that you're reading right now?
There's actually one that I'm bringing. I got it right here. It's actually not skill acquisition, not anything like scientific. I just got it. I'm bringing it to Europe. How Basketball Can Save the World. Haven't heard much about it. Somebody just gave me the recommendation, so I'm going to bring it to Europe with me when I leave tomorrow and see how I can apply some of these things. But I've started to, like, at a certain point, I think a lot of this is an interesting concept that, Dave, I'll be interested on hearing super quickly your thoughts on. But, like, at a certain point, it feels like you're reading kind of the same information from, like, a skill acquisition standpoint. And you can get these little nuances. But to me, I feel like the depth that I've gone into skill acquisition is, it's never going to be sufficient because I just talked about this whole 20-year versus 5-year doctor thing. And I'm going to stay up to date with the research. But there are times where I'm like, bro, I'm reading the same thing that I read in this book and in this book and in this book. Now it's about practically applying these things, seeing results over longer periods of time and like how these things work chronically. And then how I can bring in all these other, you know, fields or areas into what I'm doing. So it's like, if I can understand the impact that basketball makes on people in some way, that's going to indirectly bring it back to skill acquisition, right? Because like the same thing with the psychology. It's the same thing with like I've been watching a lot of like English Premier League soccer because I want to understand like how they play, how they practice, how they move. And like, so I don't know. It's at the point where like I'm looking externally, I guess, from skill acquisition to learn more about skill acquisition, which is a fun spot to be in, I think.
Yeah, I have to acknowledge the sound of Matt typing. That was hilarious.
I just didn't want to lose a thought for the wrap up.
And I lost my thought that I was gonna piggyback on that, but yeah, it's gone.
Oh man, it happens. Put it in the recap, man.
Yeah, episode 2 when you come back we'll dive into that. Matt, what do you got?
I just wanted to say like both of you are so knowledgeable in the concept of skill acquisition, and Dave referenced recently in an episode talking about how an ideal way to kind of improve training is to have multiple voices saying kind of the same thing but in different ways, and both of you are sharing a lot of these ideas and sharing a lot of this knowledge but presenting it in different ways, which for me as sort of a novice at the skill acquisition concepts or the science of skill acquisition concepts, it's really helpful to me to hear it from both of your perspectives in different ways, because something that Dave said might resonate with me better than how you said it, Coleman, and how something you said, Cole, might resonate a little more different with me. So I really appreciate kind of both of your voices in this space. And as the host, like super appreciative, and hopefully for the listeners, this has been like an awesome kind of expansion of their knowledge and these ideas.
I remember the thing that I wanted to say that when Coleman was talking about reading research and they feel like you're at like your current capacity and that you're not learning a whole lot. That's where I am with social media and shooting coaches. That I said to somebody, I don't really follow these social media shooting coaches, because I find they're all saying the same things, and I'm not learning anything new. And then I've also, in the research that I've done, found that some of the things that they're saying are actually incorrect. And you know, everybody's piggybacking, and it almost becomes we have to follow the shepherd. And I like that idea, but I also feel like, no, I at times I need to be a lone wolf and decide what do I think is necessary. And sometimes I'm going to be wrong, but I need to be able to look and say, like, where do I think the gaps are in this industry or in this skill, or, and then how, what would be my solution to that? And right now I feel like we have way too much of following the shepherds blindly. And so I'd encourage Coleman, yeah, like you are well adept at the fundamentals of this skill. So like, maintain that until something new comes along that catches your attention, and then dive in. But to most young coaches, like, you learn more in the gym working with individual players than you do from the research. Learn the research and then learn to apply that. That's where the skill is. And I'm not telling Coleman anything he doesn't already know.
It's a good reminder, though. Always true.
Gentlemen, this has been an absolute delight. We're just hit the hour mark, which like is sort of the death knell for us. We're always trying to keep it a tight 40 and it never works out that way. really quick, for the people out there who don't know you, Coleman, where can they find you online?
Yes, sir. By any means, basketball, pretty much everything, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, all that. Yep, the book is called Deep Skill. Got a coach's certification course coming out pretty soon as well that I've been working on. But pretty much all that can be found just through tapping in on Instagram, YouTube, all that.
Awesome. Coach Dave, where can the people find you?
Coach Dave Love, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram. Buy Coleman's book, Deep Skill. He's, as I said earlier, he is fantastic for taking researched ideas and teaching them in digestible, understandable ways.
Awesome. As always, I'm your host, Matt Robertson. You can't find me anywhere but LinkedIn, but that's how I like it. So thanks for coming out. Thanks for kind of coming with us through this journey. If you are not already subscribed to the podcast, please do that. Tell your friends. Thanks for coming along for the ride.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of the Coach Dave Love Podcast. To stay up to date with our future episodes, please remember to hit the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform. Don't forget to sign up for Coach Love's free shooting newsletter on CoachDaveLove.com, and be sure to follow him on social media. You can find him at Coach Dave Love.